Moving Iron Podcast is proud to be part of the Global Ag Network. The network is live, so check out globalagnetwork.com for more details and updates. Now on to the show.
Moving Iron, it's 21st century. Hardworking people working hard for you and me. Moving Iron, time and time again.
Hello and welcome to Moving Iron Podcast Markets with Angie Setzer. Angie, how are you this morning?
I'm good. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Well, there is all this market volatility, like I've talked about this all week. It's been crazy. You know, it's not so much the day-to-day stuff. It's the interday stuff, and then it's the, you know, might go on a two-day run, and then you have a three-day downward turn, or vice versa. So it's just, volatility is just crazy out there right now. And until we really get this August report out, I think we're going to see a lot of this kind of back and forth as to what, how the market's going to react to what's going on. And we still have these defined camps out there. You know, you've got the, it's going to be exactly the same. We're going to have 175, 176, 177, and then you got this other camp out here, so it's going to be less than 150. You know, it's just a huge swing in what people believe. You have to believe a little bit since there's a late plan out there right now that the bushels obviously are going to be down. I mean, that's just scientific fact, right? You can't really dispute that. But there's some clingers, man, that are just hanging on to this. So talk to me a little bit about what you see happening out there and kind of what your view on the market is right now.
You know, I kind of jumped in. I'm that person now at parties that just shows up and starts talking when a group of people are talking. I'm just like, hey, by the way, this is what I was thinking about that on Twitter. I guess maybe that's what Twitter's for, but
yeah.
I enjoy watching the conversations, and I'm weird in multiple ways, but one of the weirdest ways is, and I think it comes back, you know, I graduated with an English degree. My degree is in English, and so to get an English degree, you basically spend 4 years sitting around a room with a group of people who have read the same piece of literature, and you debate what the author meant, right? You debate right. What it means, you have critical analysis of this piece, and you know, the reality is everyone can be right in their own way, right? Mm-hmm. And so this time of year is one of my favorite times because it is the time of year where everyone can be right in their own way. Now, obviously, there are going to be people that are very wrong when the end of the year comes, but there's no real indication. Just as every day that goes by, we get more pieces of the puzzle that kind of roll in to get a better feel for what the final chapter is going to be. And what's really funny about it is we never really have a final chapter, right? We just kind of move into the next, the sequel.
Right.
You know, every year.
Right.
August comes and then we start all over again. And, you know, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of very different camps. There's a lot of very wide ranges of thinking. We were talking in our peer group this week about acreage expectations. And I said, honestly, I think at this point you could find someone, if you were to put a poll out on Twitter or anywhere that in agriculture, I think you could find people that expect 83 million acres of intended plantings and 95 to 100 million acres of intended plantings,
yeah.
Like for corn specifically.
Yeah.
Obviously, there's a lot of unanswered questions. You know what I mean? Like, could you have prevented plant acres in corn come in 7 to 10 million and not really have the actual planted acreage fall too much from where we are right now? That's kind of the thought process, right? So the thought process is, a lot of folks went out and claimed prevented plant on corn because they had acres available. You can do that. There's a certain way, you know, that and prevented plant on corn would pay more, especially if you're in an area with a high APH or something like that. So it is possible that you could see much higher prevented plant corn acres come in and not see the overall plantings fall too much from that 91.7 million that the USDA put out in June. That's a possibility. Now, I think it's important that there's certain rules, and I'm not a crop insurance agent, but I know that my customers, I had a couple customers that had decided to do that. They had to show intent they had to show that they had seed corn purchased. They had to show that they were planning on. I mean, you can't just be like, you know, go in to, and sign up for crop insurance the end of March and say you're going to grow 900 acres of soybeans and 100 acres of corn, and then at the end of June take prevented plant coverage on all of your corn without having. And so that's been the other conversation, is that some people are like, well, I've heard of prevented plant claims getting denied. Well, if you don't have intent and if you don't make a worthy effort, you will be. So there's just, I'm not saying this to cause greater confusion. I'm just saying it because no one really knows. And unfortunately, I don't know if the August report's going to give us the information that we're hoping we're going to get. Meaning, I don't know if it's going to be as clear as what we're expecting. I kind of caused some anger last week with the USDA, the low food prices thing, and maybe reiterate on that a little bit. I'm not saying they're going to manipulate the data to keep prices low. I'm saying that they're not going to come out without a strong amount of solid evidence to move food. You know what I mean? They're not going to come out in August and say, well, it looks like we have 83 million acres of corn planted, if it doesn't in fact look like that. You know what I mean? Mm. Even if we think it should, they're not going to come out and just be like, poof, it's gone. Now, we have seen in the past where they've done some things that were somewhat unexpected or maybe surprising to the market structure, somewhat aggressive, you could say. And I'm not saying that that doesn't happen in August, but, you know, I am a little worried that there's going to be this great expectation of, you know, we're going to have this moment of clarity after the August report. And, you know, I worry that we may not. Now, we're going to get FSA information included. That's the first time they've done that in the August report. They're going to use some satellite data, which if you look at the vegetation, you know, health index, there's a lot of areas that are really struggling versus a year ago. They're going to use the farmer survey of intended acres. And, you know, so there's going to be a lot of pieces of information that will hopefully make things a little bit clearer. But it's clear as mud, honestly. I mean, I made the joke yesterday. I drove 2 hours south of the elevator and back. And I made the joke that, you know, in the trade, when you talk to other market analysts or anything like that, the ongoing joke is always, and it depends on the farmer, if they say my crop looks good or my crop looks bad, but there's always the, God, my neighbor's looks like crap. Mine looks good, but my neighbor's looks like crap is usually what you'll hear.
Right.
And typically it's like, no, you know, if yours looks good, your neighbor's probably looks good. No, this year there's literally 5 miles difference between yesterday I was driving and there were fields somewhat uniform. You know, obviously from the road you can't tell if there's potholes in the middle or not, but somewhat uniform fields out there, fully tasseled, phenomenal looking. Like, I was calling my seed salesman. I'm like, who farms on M50 east of Onondaga Road? Because I need to know them because I want to buy their grain. And he's like, I don't know, Angie, that's kind of a weird question. But, you know, and then you keep driving another 10 miles and it looks like crap, you know. Right. So I have no idea what to expect. And it's funny, where I was going with this entire diatribe here is the person that I was interacting with, where I said, what I love most about this industry is that we can all have different opinions or perspectives on what the market is doing. I feel that the market is very focused, hyper-focused right now on the lack of export demand and the ethanol slowdowns that are taking place. I feel like the production problem is kind of like, yeah, we know we have a production issue, but have you looked at demand? They feel like all we're talking about is the production issue. So it was kind of interesting to see that, you know, we are on totally different ends of the spectrum. They think that there's no focus on demand whatsoever. The conversation is not really paying attention to what's taking place that is negative to demand. And I feel like we are, that's very factored in. That's why the market isn't acting as though we have an 11 billion bushel production crop, which I don't know if we do. I'm not saying that because I think we do. I'm just saying, you know, that's been thrown around. So, yeah, and then poor soybeans are like the baby in the corner, you know what I mean? Like, right, no one even cares what's going on with soybeans right now.
Nobody leaves baby in a corner, you know what I mean? It's one of those things where, of all the things out there, soybeans is usually the one that leads the market, right? It's the one that, that dictates if it's going to go up or down or whatever out there. And I can't even tell you the last time I actually heard something about soybeans that actually was substantive that I can make, I can take back and say, look, Silverstein is going to do, is going to do something here. So yeah, it's just one of those things where I'm right there with you. I have my concerns about the August report too. But I don't know with what China is doing right now in South America, buying everything they can get their hands on, whether it's beef, corn, soy, whatever it is, right? They're buying as much as they possibly can. They're, I think it's sixfold up on exports on grain out of Brazil right now to China. When that dries up, it's obviously going to sometime. They don't have an endless supply. They're going to have to come to us, and that's where I think our market is going to be that. What we see, any big moves that we see happen are going to be late in the year. I mean, late in the year. Like, normally August is a big report. That kind of carries you to January, and I just feel like it's going to be October, December time frame that you will see something take place, and that January report is going to have a huge splash in the market moving forward, assuming that you see that typical export window open up. And so I don't know, I'm a guy with a podcast. I have nothing. I don't know. I barely know what to do when I read this stuff on the market. So that's it.
Oh, brother.
Yeah. So it's all speculation. You're also hearing guests on what's going on, but there's a ton of stuff happening out there. And you know, today I think I got my ticker here and opened up two down, but it could be up 15 by the end of the day, or it could be down 15 by the end of the day, and it could have a 20-cent swing in between, between open and close. So it's a crazy market right now. Nobody knows what's going on, and it's hard to judge what's going on because of, just like you just talked about, everybody's got an opinion, and there's enough data to back that opinion up, but there's not necessarily enough data to make it substantive, I guess is the best way to put it.
Yeah, usually by now we have a general consensus, like, okay, yeah, it looks good. And okay, it looks bad, and you know, and the other thing is usually by now most of the crop is relatively close to being done with pollination, so we're just kind of entering into the phase of pollination in a lot of areas, you know, this week, late this week into next week and beyond, you know, and it's so variable. So you know, I have customers that have April corn and June corn plant, you know, from a planted standpoint, and then you have the areas that are dry that started to show up yesterday on the drought monitor. You know, and so going into this week, there was an anticipation of extreme heat entering back into the forecast the first week of August. And we did see that removed yesterday. But most of the meteorologists that I'm interacting with are kind of like, I don't even trust my forecast model for tomorrow, let alone 10 days from now, you know.
Right.
It's funny because then you have all of the people that are like, well, it's going to frost in September. And I'm like, roll with the F word here. Let's get through August and then we'll talk, you know.
That's the new one, the new thing. We're going to get this early frost. And
which every year that happens, the crop looks great, but if we get an early frost, well, no crap. You know what I mean?
Right. Right. Yeah, it's a crazy thing. Okay, so let's talk about cattle for a minute. Now, cattle market has been very volatile as well. And a lot of it's led by what we see happen in hogs. Hogs are all over the place, up and down, based on whatever rumor we hear from China about buying hogs, right? Mm-hmm. They have, that China has lifted, unofficially lifted the, I guess let me put this, rephrase that there. China has given their buyers the ability to get a credit on any tariffs on hogs that are out there now. So they haven't necessarily taken that off, but they've taken it off without, you know, you get a tax credit, so you can kind of forego that the tariff thing that's happening out there right now. So talk about what you see happen in the protein market and what some big drivers there, because we haven't really had enough summer yet to really have the grilling season be the spike, but it's kind of been all over the place. So what's your opinion?
Yeah, from a seasonal standpoint, you know, once we hit the 4th of July, it the idea of the big grilling season game, you know, is somewhat gone from what I've seen, you know what I mean? Like, that's it. But we didn't really have, you know, it was halfway noon before we got the heat and really started to be able to actually grill. So, you know, I think the big thing that we've seen, what I really find most interesting is the dichotomy between the two. So, right, hogs and cattle are your meats. That's right. What we've mentioned to. Hogs have this ability to react to a market rally very, very quickly. So the end of December came, right? Late last quarter last year, November and December, and everyone was exceptionally bullish pork because we were going to be shipping into China. We were going to have that trade agreement made. We had to cover the ASF losses, yada, 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 yada. 6 months later, we have oversupply, right? It's June, end of June into the first part of July, because you can basically, I don't want to say snap your fingers, like obviously it's not that easy, but hogs are ready to move into to slaughter a heck of a lot quicker than cattle. Mm-hmm. You know, cattle, you're really looking at, you know, it takes, what, 18 months to breed a heifer,
right?
You know, certain amount of time to for her to be pregnant and then have the calf and then another 18 months or whatever. So your growth and supply in cattle is exceptionally different. And we've been on this 5-year trend of heifer retention and growing our supply in cattle in the face of growing demand. And so the growth in supply has really helped to mitigate or offset that growth in demand. You have seen support come into the market structures, you know, for quite some time. But you've seen a lot of volatility and we went from what, cash cattle, cash fats here this spring. It all blurs together anymore, but you know, you saw 130 trade and then we were down to 109, 108, you know, in the South. And obviously the North and South are very different, but now we're starting to kind of regain our composure and work our way back up towards yesterday. I think we had confirmation of some light trade in the North, 114, 116, I believe. And so that is, usually I write it down and I didn't today, but that is, you know, somewhat supportive. We are starting to see that. And from what I'm reading from folks a lot smarter than myself who have been actively trading in the cattle market for quite some time, you know, they believe that that herd growth or the cattle supply growth has really slowed down. Heifer retention seems to be a lot lower. You know, folks are kind of moving the cattle into the pipeline. Now, obviously, feeders are back and forth. Corn prices have been higher, so why, you know, is there a demand for feeders or not? You know, this, that, and the other thing. What I find most interesting right now is everyone's really, you know, watching what's going to happen with China with pork and stuff like that. But their beef imports have increased 61% in the last, like, year over year. You know, the June imports were up 61%. Beef imports were up 61% year over year. Now tell me this, if you had your choice between a hamburger or a pork chop or a steak or a pork chop, what do you pick? Like, we like pork. I like a good pork loin every now and again, but beef is kind of the staple of our diet. And so when you introduce a whole group of people to beef and then are like, oh, well, it's cool now, our hog herd's back, I don't think you're going to see them all of a sudden be like, dang, we've been missing some pork chops. You know what I mean? Because really, you don't miss pork chops, let's be honest.
Right.
Maybe it's because I ate too many as a kid. But so I think long-term-wise, if we are slowing down on our herd growth or our you know, what we're doing with the supply side of things, I don't think you're going to see the demand go away. Now, the other thing is that China's demand has come from other countries, not the U.S. either. So if we do get a solution to the problem, do we start to export more beef that way? You know, do we see pork get exported? You know, obviously, I think we do. But, you know, I think long-term-wise, there's going to be a lot of things that happen in the cattle side of things that are going to keep price supported. You know, and maybe I'm speaking my book simply because I want to get into the cattle business. And so I'm like, Carl, really, I swear, long-term, it's going to be a great thing, you know, and maybe I'm on it, but, I want to do that. So, and I think pork too, I think we'll see China. We did see some shipments, 9,100 metric ton went over to China this past week, which is a pretty good shipment. They didn't really buy much, but you know, we have the Shanghai meeting next week and, you know, I have a feeling that we're going to end up seeing that deal put together sooner than later. Though I did see someone make a great point. I don't think we'll see it prior to that, the major 2020 election cycle. But at the same time, you know, I saw the best tweet ever, you know, in hindsight, asking a group of people who can't manage to keep their lunchbox, you know, keep out of their lunchbox before 10 a.m. when they're working in the fields to wait out a 2 to 3 year trade war, you know, might have been a miscalculation. And I was like, that is the best thing I've ever seen. We were sick of hearing about it. I mean, it's figured out, honestly.
Yeah.
But
No, I think the beef thing is going to just, yeah, you're right. I mean, I like pork too, but man, I sure like a ribeye. know, right. And they're very delicious. So
who goes to a restaurant and orders a pork chop?
Not too many people. Like, well, you can go to a restaurant, you go to a typical, like, a steakhouse, right?
Yeah.
And you start looking, they have all kinds of meat and stuff on there. They have 47 different steaks on the pork chop.
Yeah, and you can have a pork chop. Here's a pork chop. I mean, let's be honest, pork chop is kind of like chicken breast for a grown man. You know what I mean?
It's the other white meat.
It is. It is delicious.
It's awesome. Don't get me wrong. I like my pork. I'm not going to pretend like I don't.
The three of us can put down a pork loin pretty easily. You know what I mean? I'm not saying, but if given a choice long term, once I get a taste for, you know, you incorporate beef into your diet. And I think exposing a large portion of the society over there to beef now versus where they had been before, you know, and they don't have the ability to really, they just don't have the space. And so I think you see a continuation of solid beef imports into China, whether it's from us or someone else, you know, as we move ahead. And so I think global beef demand really has the capacity to explode. And I think it's one of those things we don't really talk about a whole lot. But, you know, at the same time, maybe it's a concept far above my, maybe I shouldn't even be touching on it simply because I'm not a cattle trader. But I, you know, looking at it from the outside, looking in, I really think long-term wise, we're going to be, you know, impressed in what that ends up looking like.
I've had plenty of analysts talk to me about the shift in demand from in Asia, especially China, from pork to beef, because of the ASF scare, which we haven't even heard anything about for a while. So, and who knows how bad it is, because it's been under the radar for the past couple months. I really haven't heard much about it, so it's hard to say what's even going on over there right now. But there's demand for beef, and they're buying
it. There with the U.S. Soybean Group right now, and you know, they're saying it's terrible, it's bad, it's not going to improve anytime soon. But I also know that, you know, again, going back to the peer group and stuff like that, we have some pretty well-connected people in that group that are saying that there are a lot of folks from the United States that are actively investing in modernizing the Chinese hog herd because they know that it works. You know, these multi-story feeder houses, and, you know, that changes everything. So maybe we don't see that small backyard herd rebuilding take place, but, you know, it's very, very possible that a new modernized hog herd, you know, which obviously it's not completely free of ASF risk, but it completely, you know, can kind of close off your outside influence and really kind of improve your rations and make sure you know what you're feeding and this, that, and the other thing. I think they could rebuild their herd a lot quicker than we're expecting, but I also see the bigwigs out there saying, you know, Cargill closed down some mills, ADM saying it's very problematic, Bunge, I think, is also saying it. So I'm just sitting here like, well, I'm just a dumb dummy from Michigan, so probably I shouldn't be like, oh, I don't really think it's going to be that bad long term. You know what I mean?
Right.
But I guess we'll see.
We will definitely see. All right, Angie, plenty of stuff going on. Folks want to reach out to you, pick your brain, maybe ask some questions about what you see happening in the market. What's the best way to do that?
You can find me on Twitter at Goddess of Grain, or you can email me at asetzer@citizenselevator.com. So the sitter just got here, so everyone has to lose their mind again. So have a good weekend.
All right, we'll see you. Take care of yourself.
You too. Thanks.
All right, bye. Thanks for listening to this edition of the Moving Iron Podcast, now part of the Global Ag Network. If you'd like to continue any of these conversations, you can hit me up on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram at Moving Iron LLC. You can also send me an email at Moving Iron Podcast at MovingIronPodcast.com. You can also visit the Moving Iron Podcast YouTube channel and watch Market Roundup with Chip Mellinger, Sean Hackett, and Angie Setzer. Also, Tax Moves with Glenn Birnbaum. Please visit MovingIronLLC.com. Here you can find information, details, and updates for the 2019 Moving Iron Summit in Nashville, Tennessee. If you'd like to support the podcast, you can leave a review and subscribe at iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, SoundCloud, and GlobalAgNetwork.com. So until next time, let's go move some iron. This is Casey Seymour. Out. Moving iron in the 21st century.